Smart cities, it all starts with data. Hello, you're listening to Fast Forward on the World Transformed. This program presents ongoing conversations with thought leaders who are shaping our future through new ideas and new technologies. In this edition of Fast Forward, Bill Pugh, a managing partner with Smart Connections Consulting, joins us to discuss smart cities initiatives from a systems perspective. What motivates governments to begin putting smart city solutions in place? What would make these initiatives more effective? And why should we ultimately be thinking not about smart cities, but smart regions? Let's explore. The future begins right now.
Live to see it, friends, and welcome to the World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, a future that will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and I'm pleased to welcome you to this, the second installment in our ongoing series on smart cities. And we have a very special guest joining us to talk about smart cities today. I'm very pleased to welcome Bill Pugh to the program. With a background in telecommunications and IT, Bill is a managing partner at Smart Connections Consulting, where he provides public and private sector clients technological thought leadership, guidance, and practical support for wired and wireless connected initiatives, as well as roadmaps for open data and analytic objectives. Bill has over 25 years of experience in wired and wireless strategy of platform development and deployment of networking technologies for private and public companies. In recent years, he's been engaged with cities on strategies for executing smart city initiatives around streetlights, smart parking, intelligent traffic, and security. Bill Pugh, welcome to the World Transformed.
Hey, Phil. Thanks a lot for having me. It's an absolute honor to be speaking with you.
Well, it's great to have you on. You know, I was reading over that list of topics there, the streetlights, the smart parking, intelligent traffic, and security, and we were talking about some of those things when you and I met up at the Smart City Symposium last month. And we, you know, there's a lot of discussions going on, a lot of people throwing a lot of ideas around smart cities. And one of the things I noticed is that you've got a kind of a different take going into smart cities than maybe everyone else does. When I had Franny Matthews on the first installment of this, the first question to her was, how do you define smart cities? And I think I'll probably end up asking that of everybody that I have on, but I really like where you start with. And when I talk to Franny, it's like, when you talk about smart cities, it all comes down to data. But I would say your position is it all kind of starts with data, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, just to answer the question about what is a smart city? I think first off, all cities would be a little bit different in terms of their definition of a smart city. But second to that, I've never heard a single city call themselves a dumb city. So
interesting. Yeah.
We'll throw that out there. It starts with data from my perspective. When the smart city boom kind of kicked off, it was a premise that cities have a ton of data and they're not doing anything with it. And so fast forward a few years and every city that I'm in, I see, you know, solution providers coming in and they're selling hardware. Whereas from my perspective, I want to understand, and I think it's important for the cities to understand, what do you have today? And look at the number one, number two, number three initiatives and start with the data that you currently have and then move forward with what improvements you would like to make to solve for the initiatives that you have for the city and its citizens.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things that I found interesting in our discussion was, yeah, you can look around and you'd see that there are a host of solutions offered for smart cities, and some of it's hardware and some of it's software solutions, and people have, well, they have methodologies. There's a whole lot of infrastructure showing up in support of smart cities. But it does kind of come down to this question of, well, okay, so you've got a solution. Have you identified the problem first, right? Do you know what problem you're trying to solve with smart cities? Maybe people need to take a step back and look at that one first.
Absolutely. I mean, it was, initially it was streetlights. Everyone, jumped on the relamping initiatives of, upgrading the streetlights to LEDs and then connecting them. And then from the connecting of the streetlights, you now have the ability to deploy other sensors and things of that nature. And while I'm not in disagreement with that, I think that that's not the city's biggest problem. The cities themselves have a number of challenges, starting from the inside in terms of the vertically integrated organization sharing data with themselves, all the way to the OT side of the world, where you're deploying all of these sensors for people counting and vehicle counting and what have you, environmental monitoring and everything of that nature. But again, I when I look at it, it's cities have to have a vision for what they seek to achieve. And then they have to start asking the right questions of the solution providers to ensure that these solutions are actually going to solve my problem or move me in the right direction. So I kind of look at it as the solution providers are understanding that there's problems in the city, and they think that, well, if you deploy my solution, we will provide you these new insights. And I would argue that in a lot of instances, there's data already available within the city. Now, it may not be the quality data that you're looking for, but you should start with that to identify where you need to augment and add or improve.
Because whatever else you're going to get from any new system you put in place, or especially any new device you put in place, if you go with smart street lamps or smart street lights or any of those things, what are they going to do? Well, they're going to produce a bunch more data. You're going to have even more data, and you haven't figured out what you're doing with the data you got. Yeah,
exactly. So now, and on top of that, if I'm a city, I'm a CIO or I'm the city manager, and I have these vertically integrated organizations, and street lights are deployed. So Public Works is looking at the streetlights, and someone else is looking at something else, and then the IT department is looking at something else. And I don't have the data fusion that is going to deliver to me a single pane of glass by which I can say, oh, I see that these streetlights are operating, or I have day burners, or I have these other things, but there's a lot of other activity that's taking place. How do you utilize that data to invoke either different behaviors or solve for public safety issues or things of that nature across the board, and then provide those insights to the vertically integrated organizations that need it?
Right. It makes a lot of sense. Well, let me ask you this. One of the things that I've been hearing a lot about is this focus on regions rather than cities. So talking about smart regions, it was one of the ideas that kept popping up at the symposium. So I guess this is kind of a two-part question. One is, why would we think about regions rather than just cities is question number one. And number two is, if we do that, doesn't the data issue become that much more complex, because then we're dealing with data from a lot of different municipalities or jurisdictions or what have you?
That is a huge topic. Let me give you an example. One of the first cities that I worked with, Palo Alto, we go through and we help them in terms of using the data to provide visualizations for the traffic, as a monitoring aspect of the solution. And we improve the traffic flow there. But if I go to the neighboring city, Mountain View,
right,
or Sunnyvale, or Santa Clara, or down to San Jose, I don't have that same experience. And so it becomes very clear that, and I'm not saying that city by city is not good. It's great. Every city needs to have these initiatives and work being done. But if I have a regional approach and we solved the challenges associated with procurement, and we solved the challenges with a collective vision, and we solved the challenges of data utilization and what data is going to be used for what solutions. Now I get to have an experience going from city to city that is the same. And that has to be part and partial to the conversation of improving cities overall.
Well, that's a great example. When you pick that particular geography, I'm thinking, because it really draws attention to it. I'm sure that everywhere that smart city initiatives are being put in place, there is a potential conflict between two adjacent municipalities if they're using different solutions. But I can only imagine in Silicon Valley, which is what you just described, that it's that problem on steroids, right? They're probably, everybody's trying a lot of different things, I'm guessing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And to compound that, it's ownership of the data.
Right.
I think that, you know, I'm starting to see it more now where, you know, the contracts that are written, the city states that it owns the data. And I think that that's hugely important. But in the past, there were instances where I'm working with the city and I say, you know, can I get your historic parking data? And they've got to go to the solution provider and ask the solution provider for the data. Hmm. You know, these are things that when, you know, at the, you know, I'm calling this an inflection point because initially it wasn't thought about in terms of data fusion because parking was an isolated solution in and of itself, traffic monitoring and management by itself, and the flow, just basically the flow of how the city works was, no one considered, let's fuse all of this data together and understand how people are moving through the city, where they're at, how do we interact with the citizens and visitors of the city and things of that nature. And now you start to see the compounding of challenges in terms of data sharing, data ownership, and then, of course, the million-dollar question, you know, is there a monetization exercise that needs to be had there? So it's data is the new oil type thing. Yeah. And everyone's looking to, you know, get their piece of it and what have you. But I think that we've still got to get back to the brass fundamentals of why are cities doing this? And it's 100% to enhance operational efficiency for the city, citizen engagement within the city. And lastly, but definitely not least, you know, we have to consider the digital divide or, you know, digital equity and what have you. All of these things have to be, you know, front and center in terms of why we're on this movement.
One of the things that occurs to me as you're talking about that is that there's plenty of motivation for all of those communities to work together. I mean, I can imagine that traditionally there's plenty of motivation to try to keep your own sandbox toys in your own sandbox, right? There's always that fear. But if you're sharing your data, if you're using similar structures of data and compatible data with your neighbor to your right and your neighbor to your left, and you're going to share data with them, you've suddenly got three times as much data as you had potentially, right? And it's not just that it's more of the same. It's a more complete story than you had before. You know that someone is driving through your municipality, right? Now you know where they're coming from and where they're going to, right? I mean, it's like you have a much greater understanding of what's happening. The ones who stopped there, the ones who started there, all of that kind of, the people who leave your municipality, where do they end up, right? Wouldn't it be great to know those kinds of things? And if you're sharing data, then you've got a lot more complete, I guess, of a vision of the whole thing.
Yeah, I think that's right. And again, it gets down to, you know, the things that, you know, initially we hadn't thought about, but are coming to the surface now. And that is, you know, how much do you know about any, you know, individual within the city? And, you know, so this speaks to the personal identifiable information piece of it, the security of the data, all of those things. But I think that part is the clarity part. So you clarify, you know, what data you're going to be using and how you're going to use it. And the rest of it, you know, just kind of gets sequestered. You know, you're not interested in, you know, I'll say facial recognition and things of that nature for the general populace and for the general applications of data usage. There may be a public safety or a first responder requirement that says, hey, you know, I would like to have this. But that, I don't even think that we're there yet. I think that we've got to get the infrastructure in place. We've got to get the policy and privacy and security elements in place first. Then you can grow to the, you know, the real advanced elements of, okay, well, the police department, you know, has access to these cameras and they have access to this data set, which then has a level of facial recognition or something of that nature where I can help identify a nefarious subject that's roaming through the city.
Well, one of the ideas I heard at the symposium was that in the case of Colorado, we've got Denver, obviously, is a 500-pound gorilla in the room when talking with the other communities that surround it. And one of the things it's done is it's opened up its RFP so that all the other communities have access to that and are encouraged to align their systems with Denver, and that would make sure then that they're aligning their data types and that things are going to be able to be shared. Do you think that's the best model for getting cities across a region onto the same page, or are there other ways of doing that?
Well, you know, I think that's a really nice model because again, you know, it addresses the procurement challenge. And then it seeks to align, you know, data formats and data usage and all of these common elements that a region would benefit from. I mean, part of the challenge with smart cities is part and parcel to what happened with the smart grid when it was, you know, in its boom. And smart cities has not received funding. Right. In the same fashion. During the smart grid boom, we had stimulus dollars and IOUs and other municipality, utilities could secure those funds, and then they were able to create their smart grid and satisfy their smart grid initiatives. Smart cities has not seen that yet, and so you now have to be more creative in terms of, you know, how do we attract a region, initiative, and how do we get everybody to have the opportunity to secure their solutions that are identical to the city adjacent to them. So I like that. I like that model. I'll be following it to see how many actually adopt it and utilize it. But I think that we have to have more of that.
Yeah. And it feels like there's still a lot of kind of figuring out how that's going to work to be done, because it seems like it's a good centralized model, and they seem to be doing it well in Denver, where it is a kind of a sharing model, not a "we're ordering you around," right? Kind of a picture, which that could turn into.
Well, it could, and I mean, but you know, having that level of freedom to say, you know, I'm an adjacent city, and I'm, you know, my number one thing is not parking; it is actually traffic. So I'm going to take advantage of this procurement vehicle, as opposed to having to go through and litter the city with proof of concepts and pilots that never either get taken out or utilized. I can actually say this has already been proven. Denver has already, you know, said, yes, it works, and here are the results. I want that. And off you go. When you see these multitudes of RFPs and how they're written and how they're defined, it gets to be, again, it adds to the city by city and no continuity city by city.
Right, right. Something I've been dealing with in the private sector, working with big enterprise companies, is this ongoing issue around what's going to go to the cloud and what's going to stay on premises. And for some companies, they do financial services, they do healthcare. There are regulations, pretty strict regulations, governing how they have to control some data related to people's accounts, personal information, those kinds of things. And they have to keep it on-prem because it's, you know, there's regulations that say that. So they say, well, here I want to have this much of my footprint here in my facility, and I want to have this much, as much as I can, I want to move it up to the cloud, or as little as I can, I want to move it up to the cloud, depending on the business. Now, it seems that in the smart city space, that whole discussion takes the form of this question of the cloud versus the edge. And that has to do with the analysis, how fast we're able to process that data and make sense of it. Can you tell a little bit about what that tension is and why that's important?
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's, I think there's a challenge in terms of the definition. Yeah. To a number of folks, when you say the edge, that could be the IT core network edge, which can be, you know, either on-prem or in the cloud. Right. And then the OT side of the world, where you have an edge router or an edge device that is aggregating data, processing that data locally, and then potentially making decisions on behalf of the solution. And I think that both are necessary. We have not seen the influx of solutions actually, you know, taking the space by storm yet, but it is absolutely necessary when you look at the volume of data that's going to be created just from deploying all of these sensors. An example of that is I'll go back to Palo Alto and say on 120 intersections, we're generating 4 terabytes of data per day. But when you utilize, you know, some intelligence built into that, the ability to reduce that over 50% is there because of useful data, redundant data being kicked out. Or sequestered and not sent back to the cloud.
Right.
So I think that part comes in terms of what is the latency required. So if there's a latency requirement that you got to make, you know, quick decisions, and that definition of quick decision drives you to saying, well, edge intelligence is the way to do this. But this is specifically for a given use case, primarily traffic, of course. If you're talking about adaptive traffic signals and when they should change and how they should change and timing of all of that, an edge-based solution will help you in that effort. You really kind of want to reduce the amount of data that you're actually bringing back to the cloud for a number of reasons. What data is useful? Again, we get back to understanding what your baseline is. So what data do you really need to bring back to the cloud? And what data is okay to be left on the edge and utilized for decision-making? So I kind of say that, again, we're in the infancy of all of that, but we have to take a step back and understand what's our architecture. What problem are we trying to solve?
Right.
What's the architecture for that? And then, you know, gauge the benefits and have a real plan around that. So, you know, this is the part where you may very well spend a year putting together your standards, your policies, your practices around data governance and things of that nature. So I think that both are still needed. Not one is going to win over the other. It's just a model by which we operate that I think is in the midst of being created.
Yeah, and I mean, and some of it's pretty obvious when you're talking about we have a certain amount of understanding that needs to go into the report we put out every month. Well, you know what the latency is there, and that's fine, right? No big deal. But as you said, when you get into, you're making these split second, microsecond, you know, nanosecond decisions about changing the light and changing the traffic flow, and I mean, there's people's schedules and lives and stuff on the line, then it's a completely different scale. Something else is happening altogether. And it's interesting when you start talking about things like traffic management, that goes beyond what a lot of people are thinking about when they think of smart cities, even though a lot of smart cities th- thinking began with traffic, and we're going to come back to traffic in a moment. But before we hone in on that one, let's talk about some of the other pieces. For example, we talk about the smart grid. That's part of the smart city, although sometimes people tend to think of that one as its own kind of issue. So what are the pros and cons of having a smart city model that includes more and more pieces versus one that is very focused on just a few things?
Well, I think that first and foremost, it's what's your level of effort, then there's the collaboration between the local utility or the municipality and the city. And then it moves up to who owns what assets. And I mean, so it's not even a technology problem. It's more of a business operations challenge in turn, kind of related to how do utilities operate today and how do the cities operate? Smart grid is absolutely a part of smart city, primarily because if you don't have the grid operating, you don't have the city operating.
Right, right.
So, I think when a lot of people think smart grid, they think the meters on your home. And the meters on your home is the end point. But you got to get all the way back to the transformers, the switches and reclosers, and the distribution of that energy that then tie into all of the other, sustainable and renewable solutions. So solar and wind and, other things that are kind of tied to the grid that then power all of these other devices that are now going to be in the city. So I think that there's an absolute tie-in, and we need to think about that in the larger context of smart cities. The bigger challenge, though, again, to me is I think, getting these two entities to actually talk to each other and come up with a unified plan.
Right, right. Because it's not much good having a smart city and a smart grid. Imagine you got both of those and they're not talking to each other. Now, that would truly
exactly.
be a dumb city, right? Now, that would be a
dumb city. It wouldn't be the smartest, but
because
absolutely.
You're not using the smarts you have. I mean, it's one thing to say, well, we've got a smart grid. We don't have a particularly smart water system. And you understand, where intelligence has been added, where things have been improved and where they haven't. But everywhere you're doing that, it seems like you want to optimize towards having it all work together. I mean, that's just fundamentals of system theory, right? Of making things work together.
Yes.
So taking it back to fundamentals, we kind of started, you and I, when we were talking about challenges with improving traffic and congestion. So why don't you step us through that a little bit? What are the issues and what are the opportunities around traffic and congestion with smart cities? Because I think you've spent more time maybe on this than some of the other areas.
Well, I think number one is there are metrics around, you can read them in various reports about how much time is spent just getting from point A to point B, especially in the more congested areas. But the majority of cities are experiencing some level of congestion and time to get from point A to point B. So it kind of starts with that. But the challenge that I've seen is, some solution providers come in and there are various components. Right. There's, companies that have image sensors, cameras that are intelligent and can tell you, there's this many cars in queue. There's the, vehicles are traveling at this velocity. Then there's the ton of sensors that are already in use in a number of the cities with loop detectors and crosswalk buttons and things of that nature in conjunction with the cameras. One centralized component to this is the traffic management system. All of that data comes through that if a city is actually using it. But today and in the past and still even today, there's things are operating on timers. Even if it's variable timers throughout the day, we know that this is a peak. So change the timing of this light to every every 2 minutes we're going to, or every minute we're going to change it. And there's a coordination. Now, a lot of this is governed by signal phasing and timing, in SPAT data, is there. But when we start talking about how do you improve the flow, again, this is going to be, I think, a very incremental process in terms of let's collect that data, let's analyze that data, and let's visualize that data first, because we've been doing this for so long without automation, without really, truly achieving adaptive traffic signals. And I think that a conservative approach is what we're seeing. Everybody kind of wants to see the, see the visual first, keep the operations the same, and then realize where we can become more efficient. Now, there's clearly an opportunity in terms of the fusion of data. So if a city says down this corridor, we're going to try adaptive. We understand the flow of traffic, and we've done some studies and we understand what's happening. So we're going to try removing the timers, and we're going to go adaptive during, this period of time. And by the way, we're going to incorporate some environmental monitoring. We want to check the CO2 within along this corridor. And it's that in and of itself is going to take 6 months, 9 months to get through that study. And then they say, yes, there was an improvement, but it was the fusion of data that kind of allowed traffic to hit their metrics of improved flow, and sustainability to hit their metrics about where they're going to be on their carbon initiative.
So, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so when you start putting all those pieces together, it seems like looking at the data, as you said, you've got to begin with what it is that you're trying to accomplish. You're managing traffic and congestion. What are you looking to do? Well, you would think primarily maybe cut the commute, get people home sooner. And you think, well, if you do that one, you're probably also cutting those CO2 emissions. So that might be a win-win. You're also looking at safety. You're also looking at what configuration of everything working together is resulting in the most accidents, what's resulting in the least accidents. And what's going to get interesting is when those data, if they do, start disagreeing with each other, right? When you say, well, you know what, we can get everybody home 5 minutes earlier, but now we're going to have one more fender bender for every 10,000 cars on the road or something like that. But you can't make those decisions unless you have the data.
Exactly. And it all starts with data.
So in the end, it comes back to, let's get the data and look at it. Let's know what we're doing. And then maybe we've got a real opportunity to improve things.
Exactly. I mean, this is the importance of having a vision, a strategy, and an execution plan. The majority of cities that you talk to will, tell you they've got a Vision Zero initiative. And I hear so much of the initiatives, the buzzwords, and here's what we're going to attempt to do. I just think that we have to start, communicating and sharing that information across the board. I really think a number of cities have sister cities and what have you. A lot of that stuff, the learnings, if there are experiments or proof of concepts or pilots that are going on, there needs to be a larger forum for sharing the results of that. And when you go to these smart city events and everything like that, let's start talking about, well, we failed on this one, and here's why. Did anybody else experience anything like that? Instead, we currently hear, it was a success. It was great. We're moving to full deployment. But I think there's a lot to be garnered from the failures.
Yeah, probably a lot more lessons to be learned from the failures than from the highly touted successes. So that,
exactly.
That's interesting. It's yet another use of the data, sharing yeah. the data amongst those who've not had things work out and get a better idea of how to implement a smart city.
Exactly.
It really does all come down to data in the end, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
All right. Well, Bill, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. And was there anything else that I failed to ask that you wanted to tell me about smart cities today?
No, it was, like I said, it was an absolute honor to be speaking with you today. And look forward to another opportunity.
Well, I hope we can do it again sometime soon. We'll check on the progress that the industry makes here as we move forward, see if we can get folks sharing data. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening. We will be back with part 3 of our ongoing series on smart cities in the very near future. And until next time, live to see it.
To learn more about Smart Connections Consulting, go to smartconnections.io. To learn more about this program, visit worldtransformed.com. Thanks for listening.